The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org. So welcome. Welcome. A really warm welcome to everybody. Wherever you might be, and whatever situation you might find yourself in as you're listening to this or watching it, as the case may be. So, I want to mention that a book just got published, called Be the Refuge, with the subtitle Raising the Voices of Asian American Buddhists. It's written by the amazingly talented Chenxing Han. And I know Chenxing, and I know a lot of work went into writing this book and pulling it all together. And on Sunday afternoon, February 28th, IMC is sponsoring an event to discuss the book. So everybody's invited to that. And this book is a part memoir from Chenxing, as well as it's a result of her research and the experience of Asian American Buddhists, and it's quite touching. So I can recommend this book. And of course, with the title of Be the Refuge, she discusses this, or, you know, in the book. And without giving away the details of the book, I'll say that a person in the book describes how they were to turn their practice toward being a refuge for others. They're such a beautiful idea. I think this act of generosity, this act of recognizing the impact that we have on others, and this wish to be a refuge for others. In some ways, maybe that kind of summarizes the Buddhist practice, is to find a way in which we can be a support for everybody in some kind of way. But in the book, this individual talks about creating a space where people feel calm and positive in a way that they are taking care of each other rather than creating agitation. Sometimes there's this bonding through mutual outrage. I think Kim Allen, I heard her say that, and I recognize that there certainly have been times in my life when, you know, my friends were like, yeah, and can you believe this also and that? Oh my gosh, and not only that, this, and then we just kind of rattle ourselves up more and more. But what is it to create a space where people feel calm and positive, not by being Pollyanna, not by denying what's happening, but to recognize that tremendous value is there by not creating conditions that makes people more agitated or more feeling ill at ease or more worried or anxious or whatever it might be. But to be a refuge in a way that to create a space, either literal or metaphorically, create a space where people can feel some well-being, some calm and positivity. And then in Chenxing's book, this individual also talks about one way to be a refuge is to create communities that are refuges for others, where people can find comfort and well-being, and sometimes that's through affinity groups, people coming together that maybe look similar or have similar beliefs or have similar backgrounds, similar ethnicities, similar experiences, similar preferences, whatever it might be, similar ages. So affinity groups, one way we can help create a refuge, to help be a refuge, is to either create communities that perhaps don't exist, or if they do exist, to show up in a way and that we can convert them into a place that is a refuge. And of course, it's not only affinity groups. There's all kinds of Kalyanamita groups, good spiritual friends, and people that live in the similar geographical area that before COVID would meet in person to talk about the Dharma. I'm imagining many of them are meeting online now. And for some of these programs we have at IMC, we kind of try to facilitate a little bit the creation of home groups, which are kind of like this Kalyanamita groups, these ideas, small community where people can practice together and discuss and explore different topics. And of course, there's even these, when we're on the Zoom meetings, I know for some teachings that we do here at IMC, with some of the programs that are on Zoom, we break people up into breakout groups, you know, maybe 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 people. And those, of course, are also kind of a little bit of a community. And what would it be like if we had this idea that kind of to be a refuge is to help create a community wherever we might find ourselves, where people can feel safe, they can feel some comfort and some ease. And for us to have this movement of the heart to be inclusive and to be generous with our attention and our time. So Chen-Hsing Han, she describes this in her book, Be the Refuge, Raising the Voices of Asian American Buddhists. There's all kinds of great stuff in that book. But also we can look to see, what do the suttas have to say? What does it mean to be a refuge for others? We often associate this word refuge with taking refuge. Take refuge in the Buddha, Dharma, and the Sangha. Not so much this idea of be a refuge. And there's a sutta that's in the Pali Canon, and it has a parallel that was also preserved in Chinese. And it talks about this idea of being a refuge, and as is often the case, or maybe even always the case, that when there's a sutta that's in the Pali Canon and there's a parallel that's got preserved in Chinese, that there's differences between them. And so I'll be focusing on what the part that's the same between these two suttas. So in this sutta, the Buddha says to a Brahmin, "It is here, Brahmin, that you should bathe to make yourself a refuge for all beings. It is here, Brahmin, that you should bathe to make yourself a refuge for all beings." So maybe we can unpack this a little bit. What is the Buddha talking about bathing and making oneself a refuge? So maybe I'll start by saying this expression, make yourself a refuge. If we look at the Pali, I can't read Chinese, so I'm not sure exactly what it says in the Chinese, but if I look at the Pali, the translation maybe more literally would be make yourself a place of safety, or make a sanctuary or something like that. It's not the same word, refuge, sarana, that we when we take refuge in the Buddha, Dharma, Sangha. But a number of English translators have used this word refuge, and I rather like it. So this idea of making yourself a refuge for all beings. So this idea of bathing comes from the context of the sutta, as you might imagine. So in this sutta, the Buddha is with some monastics, and he sees in the distance that there's a Brahmin. So a Brahmin at this time and in this setting, and this is, we could think of as a priest for the dominant religious tradition at that time in ancient India. So somebody who was not only a practitioner, but somebody who was an upholder, maybe we could say, of the tradition, of the dominant religious tradition at that time, which we might call Brahmanism. And so the Buddha is with some monastics, and he sees this Brahmin in the distance that's approaching him. And knowing that the Brahmin will overhear what the Buddha is about to say, the Buddha begins his talk, directed to his monastics, but also kind of directed towards this Brahmin. And he says that there are these 16 different types of impurities or defilements in the mind. We can think of this impurities or defilements. We could think of this as one way that I find helpful to think about them are things that are extra. Like, we don't need them. They're not helpful. And so for me, that's one way I like to think about it. Defilement and impurity sometimes has this feeling of this puritanical way of uptightness or something like that to some of the associations we might have with these words. I don't know if that was the associations that were with these words in ancient India, but I like this idea of things that are extra and that we don't need them. And the Buddha gives these 16. I'll go through this list, don't worry. I'm not going to unpack them all or anything like this, but just to give you a sense, what are these, this list? Covetousness and unrighteous greed, ill will, anger, resentment, offensiveness, contempt, envy, stinginess, deceit, fraud, obstinacy, aggression, conceit, arrogance, vanity, and negligence. So we might summarize perhaps this list of 16 as maybe greediness of selfishness, or I want more, or I need more. Or maybe it's aversion, a will, hostility, kind of like, get away from me, or get this away from me. Or maybe also this self-assertion or conceit. We might also think of it like, don't you know who I am, kind of thinking. And I would say with the exception, maybe it's that last one, negligence. Negligence is just maybe not applying ourselves or not being careful or attentive or something like this. So maybe the first 15 we might summarize, and you might recognize this idea of I want more, I need more, or get this away from me, or don't you know who I am? And these are manifestations of greed, hatred, and delusion, some of the core foundational defilements. But the way that the Buddha is using these, the words that he's using, right, he's not talking about, you know, just the core fundamental ones with some of these words of aggression or stinginess or envy or arrogance, vanity. Using some of these words, they're some of the ones that are, maybe we might think, well, these are just minor manifestations of some of these deeper things that are extra, defilements, impurities. But I appreciate what Neapanika Thera, who was an elder in this tradition, like his book, The Heart of Buddhist Meditation, was one of the first and pretty foundational books written in English, came out in the mid-60s, about Vipassana practice. And he writes, how much more pleasant and harmonious will be human relations, individual and communal, if there is less pettiness and peevishness and fewer vanities and jealousies and less self-assertiveness in words and deeds. So that was kind of one his way when he looked at this list of 16, thinking like it would just be so much easier to get along with other people, whether it's just one other people or whether we're in a group. If there is less of these things, these 16 different qualities. And we also might consider that there is a connection between these qualities and the deeper roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. And so to work with where they show up, and maybe what we might consider minor or we might consider surface level, to work with them and how they get expressed in our daily lives is really a way in which to work with the deeper ones, the foundational, the root defilements. So then the Buddha, in the sutta, he continues after talking about this list of 16 defilements. He says, if you know it's a defilement, abandon it. Seems so straightforward, right? Makes it sound easy. Of course it's not easy. But this is why we have a meditation practice and why we have a Buddhist practice, not just meditation, but all of them, all of the elements of the Eightfold Path or the gradual training. That is to recognize if you know it's a defilement, if you know that this is something that's extra, that's not helpful, that doesn't lead to greater freedom, but instead leads to less freedom and to some suffering, abandon it. So what are some ways in which we can lessen the attachment, the clinging, the stickiness of some of these expressions of greed, hatred, and delusion? So if you know it's a defilement, sometimes we don't know. Sometimes these are habits of mind. Sometimes we're so used to thinking, well, of course I'm filled with arrogance because everybody else is an idiot. What do they know? Or I don't know, maybe that's an exaggeration, but are there some ways that maybe we weren't quite considering that they were impediments to greater freedom and greater ease? And then the Buddha in the sutta continues, and he goes with describing Brahma-Vihara practice. Probably many of you, if not all of you, are familiar with this practice. It begins with imbuing the mind with loving kindness. This is goodwill, respect, benevolence, care, friendliness, love for others and oneself, not just others and oneself. And the way loving-kindness practice is described in the suttas, which is a little bit different than how we practice it, like when I do happy hour, relying more on the way loving-kindness practice is described in the commentaries, so a little bit after the time of the suttas. But in the suttas is to imbue the mind with loving-kindness, this warm-heartedness, if you will, and then to pervade it in 10 directions. 4 directions we can think of as the cardinal, north, south, east, west. And then 4 directions are the intermediate, northwest, southwest, northeast, southeast. And then the 2 directions above and below. All directions. So to imbue the mind with loving kindness, and then pervade 10 directions with this warm-heartedness, and then with a mind that is boundless, exalted, immeasurable, and well-developed. I find myself smiling when I'm talking about this because sometimes, right, if we have this loving kindness practice and we're able to really fill the heart and mind with this goodwill, and to be sending it out and including ourselves with it. That is such a way in which we can have, in which we are not expressing aggression or stinginess or deceit or contempt or resentment, all these other things that are in this list of 16. So in the sutta, it's not clear if the Buddha is saying first abandon these 16 defilements and then practice the Brahma-viharas, or it's and practice the Brahma-viharas, or maybe we might even understand it that practicing the Brahma-viharas is a way in which we can help us to abandon some of these 16 qualities. So many of you know the Brahma-viharas. I first started talking about loving-kindness, but it also includes compassion, sympathetic joy, and equanimity. There's those four movements of the heart, we might say. So I won't go into detail about what that is, but this just a recognition that it's a sense in which there's maybe a sense of fullness or a sense of maybe some safety, and some that itself can be a refuge. So then, then the Buddha and the Brahmin start discussing bathing and purification. So the Buddha says, Brahmin. So now he's directing his attention to the Brahmin. Maybe by this time the Brahmin has walked there and has sat down. That's not explicit, but that's what's happening in my mind, is that now the Brahmin is sitting with the monastics and is listening to what the Buddha has to say. And the Buddha says, Brahmin, this is what is called bathing the inner mind instead of bathing the outer body. So the Buddha is making a real distinction to purify, cleanse, remove what's extra from the mind, making that's really different than purifying, cleansing, removing what's extra on the body, the external body. And the Brahmin replies by saying, Gotama, you should go to the Bahuka River to bathe, because one who bathes in the Bahuka River becomes purified and eliminates all evil. So we learn that this Brahmin was a person who their practice, their spiritual practice, was to bathe in particular rivers and sacred rivers with the belief that that didn't matter so much what actions you did, as long as you included the action of bathing in the river. And then all the bad or inappropriate, unskillful, unwholesome, everything that you had done would just be washed away. And maybe as a little aside, I'll say there's another sutta. It's from the Terigata. Some of you might be familiar. This is the verses from the nuns. And there's a nun right now. Her name escapes me. I think it's Punaka, who also encounters a Brahmin who has this practice that as long as you bathe in the right rivers, you can do whatever you want. And I'm chuckling because the nun says to the Brahmin, something like this, I'm paraphrasing, well, if that were true, then wouldn't all the turtles and the fish and the crocodiles and serpents, wouldn't they all be perfectly pure? And if that were true, wouldn't all your good deeds also be washed away? So I appreciate very much that this nun isn't speaking truth to power here, this Brahmin. But getting back to this sutta where the Buddha is speaking to this Brahmin about there's to do with this inner cleansing, this inner bathing, if you will, rather than outer. And then the Buddha says to in verse, for the pure in heart, and I looked at the Pali, it's this word is heart as opposed to mind, which is, I don't know, it's a beautiful thing actually to to think about having this pure of heart, maybe with the loving kindness practice as a way that helps us to have this purity of heart, or the Brahma-Vihara practice. For the pure in heart, it's always the spring festival or the Sabbath. So the Buddha is saying, we don't have to wait for special days that we go bathe in the river to be cleansed of things that wrongdoing. If we are pure of heart, then every day is a special day. For the pure in heart and clean of deed, their vows will always be fulfilled. We don't have to go bathe in the river. And then the Buddha says, it is here, Brahman, that you should bathe to make yourself a refuge for all beings. It is here, that is, abandoning those defilements and practicing loving kindness, which maybe isn't a surprise for any of us. The part of the Buddhist practice is these two movements of the heart, two movements of the mind that allow us to show up for others, to create safety for others, to be a sanctuary for others. It also points to this idea that behaving ethically is much more than just following the precepts, but also to notice any contempt or domineering or arrogance that we might have. And for us to think about that, what are some ways we might create safe spaces for others, create safe communities, or if we find ourselves as part of a community, how can we support that community to be a place that's inclusive, that honors and recognizes and respects everybody from whatever background they have, however they're showing up. And then maybe I'll close with this an excerpt from yet one more sutta. That's this verse where the Buddha says, one whose mind all day and night takes delight in harmlessness, who has loving kindness for all beings, for them there is antagonism with none. I'll say that again. One whose mind all day and night takes delight in harmlessness, who has loving kindness for all beings, for them there is antagonism with none. That is, we can be a refuge for others. Thank you.